Fat Guys and Friends podcast. As always, joined by fellow fat man and good friend Colton Bartholomew. I'm Logan Winger. Hi, Bart.
Wang! More NFL previews.
Getting closer and closer to the regular season each day. And on the line today, we have a new friend. He's an old friend, but a new friend to the podcast, Aaron Decker. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, guys.
Let's do this.
What a solid opening, Aaron. solid opening. So you're a big Jets fan, so we're going to be talking about the AFC East today. So we'll give you the option of either opening with the Jets or saving him until later in the podcast.
We'll save it. We'll save the Jets.
All right. Let's open with the Buffalo Bills then.
All right.
What did they do? In the offseason, didn't do a whole lot. Added Zach Brown from the Titans, a linebacker, Jabari Lattimore over from the Jets, and cornerback Sterling Moore from the Buccaneers. They lost Chris Hogan to their own division. He went over to the Patriots. Percy Harvin retired on him. Mario Williams stayed in the same division, went down to the Dolphins. They lost Leotis McKelvin. That was it. I don't know why I was going to act like I was talking more.
Kind of a rough offseason for the Bills here, especially with the guys that they drafted. They're having some bad injury luck.
Yeah. It was Reggie Ragland.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
It might have a partially torn ACL.
And if it's not all the way through, there might be chances for him to play in the second half of the year, but it doesn't look good for him. And then Shaq Lawson, they knew he had a shoulder problem, and then he got surgery, and he won't be able to play at least 100% for a while.
Yeah, not a good start to training camp for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, your first and second round picks are hurt.
You guys forgot about their captain, Richie Incognito. They re-signed him.
We were waiting for that for the positives. Richie Incognito is Rex Ryan on the field.
He really is.
So last year, the Bills kind of came out and surprised everybody with some pretty decent offense under Tyrod Taylor. And they're really banking on that again. He's going to be the starter. EJ Manuel's backing him up. Wang, I'll ask you first. Like, do you feel like Tyrod's for real, or just they had some easy opponents early last year, and he's got enough skill to put up points on them?
I think Tyrod is in that same group as your RG3s and your Colin Kaepernicks, where he's a mobile quarterback, and I think he's going to be kind of a flash in the pan. I know we've seen mobile quarterbacks in the past, and they've had some success for a few years, like. Tyrod Taylor was successful last year, but it takes a few years of continued success before you call him a good quarterback in the NFL. I had him on my fantasy team last year, which was cool because he would put up some good rushing numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he might just be a flash in the pan and a placeholder until they draft a quarterback high somewhere.
Well, I feel like part of it is he is a small man. And
yeah.
When you have the line that they do, they have some pretty big guys up there. It's got to be hard for him to see. So I know some of his running around was to get throwing angles. But, Aaron, obviously you guys, your Jets played them twice a year. And what did you see from Tyrod that – are you happy that he's still a quarterback because you don't think he's that good? Or are you a little nervous about him?
It could go either way. I'm hoping he's got the upside of a Javaris Jackson. That'd be kind of nice. I don't like dual threat quarterbacks because they can always kill a good defense. Just like Michael Vick, you know. But I don't think he's that dangerous, and I'm kind of glad he's their starter. I think EJ Manuel has a higher upside, but.
Sure. And offensively, they have a lot of guys that are freak athletes that have trouble staying on the field. Charles Clay at tight end, Sammy Watkins at receiver. And then LeSean McCoy, running back. And then now backing him up, Reggie Bush.
King of injuries, Reggie Bush.
Last year wasn't his fault, but yeah, the king of injuries and, you know, not being out there, Reggie Bush. And it's just weird because Rex Ryan got put in this, like, good coach category with a team that was all about power run game and not making mistakes. Now he's got a bunch of flyers out there. It's kind of just a weird shift from what made him good.
Rex Ryan is one of the best defensive coordinators in the NFL, but he should not be a head coach, in my opinion. He was with New York and he went to back-to-back AFC Championship games, it was because his defense was so good.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Sanchez was just a game manager who could do enough on offense to not fuck up and lose the game.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I had enough time and experience watching Rex Ryan coach that he's kind of... I mean, I'm kind of over it now. Last year, I kind of wanted him to succeed until they beat the Jets in the last game of the season, knocked them out of the playoffs, so...
I was pretty all right with that.
I just felt bad, because then they spent this entire... Your Jets spent this entire offseason begging for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and it's like, well, this guy couldn't beat the Jets or the Bills, who weren't playing for anything in the last week. Didn't really make a ton of sense, but we'll probably get
Rex
to that.
Rex probably got his guys pretty motivated, though, to play his old team and keep him out of the playoffs.
Very true.
So I wouldn't say they were playing for nothing, but...
Very true. And Rex, in general, that seems to be his real strength. Like, yeah, he's a great defensive mind, but it just seems like his players like him. And there's something to be said for that in a league where everyone's kind of out there for themselves to a certain point. And when you're a
Rex
coach
like
and
that,
you've got...
He's like that kid in high school that's going to do anything to get the cool guys to like him.
Yeah.
Like, he just wants to be liked so bad.
Switching over to the Bills defense here. Lots of good front seven players, and that's kind of Rex's forte, is building that front seven and having guys that can rush the passer. They drafted Adolphus Washington out of Ohio State in the third round. Obviously, Marcel Darius, who's a little bit older now, but and hasn't really lived up to that contract, but we'll see what he does. And Carlos Williams. Or excuse me, Kyle Williams. Not Carlos. Kyle Williams on the right side. What do you see from the Bills' defense that maybe Rex Ryan can get him turned around a little bit?
Aaron, you take this one.
Okay. Oh, you want me to take this one? I mean, I still think they need some secondary help. When they go play the Patriots or the Jets, I mean, good luck trying to guard all those receiving threats. You know, the front seven may put pressure on the quarterback, but when you can throw it up to a Brandon Marshall or a Gronk, I mean, what's your front seven really do for you?
True.
It's true. The way the passing is in the NFL nowadays, all you need is a three-step drop and a good wide receiver to hit on a slant route. Or Gronk, just to beat Gronk and he'll be open. So front seven's great and all, but the way the passing league is, you need a good secondary in this league.
That's what got him fired from the Jets. You know, he had a great front seven. Well, then he lost Revis and Clamardi. Well, then now you're left with nothing on the secondary. So that's why they got burned every single time. Didn't matter how good your front seven was when it just took a three-step drop and out quickly.
Very true. One of the things about the Bills that I just find weird is that, you know, Buffalo's not a huge market, and they're obviously one of the more passionate fan bases, but they're one of the teams that always seems to be able to, like, engender some type of positivity every year. Like, people are excited about them, and then when they fail, they're, like, surprised, too, which doesn't make sense because it's like, well, yeah, then you trotted out Tyrod Taylor again, and, yeah, he was all right, but... to think that he's going to be a quarterback of an 11-12 win team, that's just not really reasonable.
It still blows my mind that people think Tyrod Taylor is one of 32 people in the world that can lead a National Football League team. Like, I just don't see him being the long-term solution in Buffalo.
For sure. And LeSean McCoy came over from the Eagles last season and got hurt, not terribly, but missed some time. At a certain point when you're a running back and a lot of your game is speed and shiftiness, it's got to be tough to continue that. And right now, let's see how old he is. He is 28, so kind of nearing that edge of when that's going to start decreasing. Do you think...
The dreaded age of 30 as a running back.
Exactly. And, I mean, at a certain point, is McCoy just going to have to... either change his game a little bit or become a little bit more north-south, or would that just kind of ruin his value?
I don't know if he can change it because it's been what he's been for so long. I mean, when he came out of Pittsburgh, he was just a burner. He's gonna use an east-west runner that's gonna make you miss and then go north-south. So I don't know if he's gonna be able, because he's not a big guy by any means. So I don't know if he's gonna be able to change his play style and still keep up the production.
All right, let's jump over to some record predictions for the Bills here. They, where'd they go last season? What, 7-9 for them last year?
Was it 7-9?
Yeah. So 7-9 last year, coming in this year. Wang, let's start with you. Where do you have the Bills going here in 2016?
I think I am further down on the Bills than most people. I think they play in a decent division. Anytime you're in a division with the Patriots, it's going to be tough. Somebody in that division is going to have to be bad, and I think it's going to be the Bills. I'm coming in at 5-11 on the year.
I am in 100% agreement with you. Rex Ryan is not a good offensive coach, as we talked about, and they didn't get better on that side. And I just see someone, either maybe a Tyrod Taylor or maybe McCoy getting hurt, and they're just, I just feel like they're not going to have it in them to be able to stay in games offensively. I actually have them going a little bit worse than you. I have them going 4-12, and only games I've really gotten winning are Cleveland. They play, let's see, Miami at home, and that's only because it's a late season game. I see a pretty rough year for the Bills coming up.
Aaron?
Well, I mean, I did a little bit of research into this whole thing, and NFL.com gave them a C-plus grade for the offseason, which is not that great. But I also had them doing a little bit better than you guys. I got them just repeating what they did last year. I don't think that they got any better, nor did they get really any worse. I think they just kind of stayed the same. So I got them at 7-9.
All right.
When we get into the Dolphins, I can explain more there, but...
Okay, sounds good. So it sounds like me and Wang have them at the cellar of the division, but since you tease them, let's jump over to the Dolphins. Wang, what were their big acquisitions and departures this year?
Not really any big acquisitions, except a few. Not on offense, though. Their big acquisition on offense was Isaiah Pede, who last played in 2015 on the Steelers practice squad. Griff Whalen, who gave us that awful, awful fake punt with the Colts last season that everybody's still laughing about. Jermon Bushrod, a offensive lineman from the Bears. But they did make some upgrades to their defense, bringing Mario Williams over. They traded for Kiko Alonso and Byron Maxwell. But they lost some big people on the offensive side that they really didn't replace. Oh, they also added Arian Foster, which just recently happened. I forgot to put him on the list. But they lost Lamar Miller. Greg Jennings just retired. They lost Quinton Coples and Brett Grimes on defense.
For sure. And then, not a player, but obviously changed head coaches. Brought in Adam Gase, who was the offensive coordinator for the Broncos and then the Bears. And now he's a head coach here in Miami. And just starting there, he's a guy that likes to tailor what he's doing to his quarterback. We saw it last year with the Bears. Jay Cutler actually cut down on it, on his interceptions, which was thought to be impossible. And
that's got to be one of the main reasons he got a head coaching job.
Yeah, and he
get Jay Cutler to cut down on INTs?
For real.
Jesus, man.
And he's got a system that gets the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly, so everybody that plays quarterback for him likes it, because they're not getting a lot of pressure. They're getting good numbers. The offense likes to, or can move the ball down the field sometimes. The problem is, he is a terrible red zone coordinator. And I watched it in Denver 2 years ago, and then last year for Chicago. He gets down to the red zone, and with even more within 10 yards, and he is just so wrapped up in trying to do crazy things and do little screens and all this other stuff, when it's like, just hand the ball off and figure it out after that. You know?
Yeah, he falls in love with his passing offense too much when you get down in the red zone.
Yeah, and we had 2 years ago for the Broncos with Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning's always going to, if the option's there to run it and that's the right option, he always does that. And then they would always call these pass plays, and it's like, oh, that's broken up because Peyton Manning can't throw. And, oh, wait, that got dropped because Demaryius Thomas is on the team. So I see a lot of that similar stuff happening here in Miami, because I don't see Ryan Tannehill as being any better than Jay Cutler. So I don't know why you would change what you do fundamentally with that as your quarterback. What do you guys see just offensively for the Dolphins this year?
Aaron, you can go ahead first.
Yeah, they're going to struggle. I mean, Ryan Tannehill hasn't lived up to any bit of that contract he signed. Lamar Miller was their best offensive piece last year, and he's gone. They're going to rely on a second-year running back. I'm going to probably murder the last name here, but Jay
Ajayi.
Yeah, they're going to rely on him, a nobody almost. It's not going to be good, I don't think. You do remember, though, they did have an offer for C.J. Anderson that got matched by the Broncos.
They did, and I know Gase really wanted him because he fits that zone read out of the shotgun really well. But I feel like that's part of the reason they brought in Foster. But keep going, Aaron.
They also lost Greg Jennings, retired. You know, do they still have Mike Wallace down there, or did he move on somewhere else?
No, he's in Baltimore now.
He's in Baltimore now, yeah. So, I mean, they got a couple of slot receivers that are decent, but, I mean, the only people that have ever succeeded with that are the Patriots.
Yeah, obviously Jarvis Landry, freak athlete on that side. But to Aaron's point, the idea that you're going to depend on Jay Ajayi or Arian Foster to stay healthy to be a piece for you, that's just risky. And you saw in Denver and in Chicago, he features running backs quite a bit. You know, he likes to get those guys the ball through in the passing game quite a bit and then handing off too. So to have two guys that are question marks at best, that doesn't seem like a good idea.
Did you mention Arian Foster? I believe he went down there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
I mean, I'm right there with you. Lamar Miller was their best offensive player last year. And to think that Arian Foster or Jay Ajayi is going to replace him is out there. I don't think Ryan Tannehill has lived up to that contract at all, like Aaron said. I don't think he's the answer in Miami. This is really going to be a make-or-break year for him. Like Bart said, Jarvis Landry is a freak athlete. I think Devontae Parker might have a breakout season, but we've been saying that for a year now. He was supposed to have a breakout season last year and didn't do much. So I think the Dolphins are going to struggle on offense this year for sure.
And switching over to their defense, they made actually a couple of moves that I didn't mind. When you've got Cameron Wake coming off an injury, if he can come back anywhere close to what he was before he got hurt, you're going to be solid there. Took a little bit too much money, I think, to bring in Mario Williams, but if he can be close to what he was in Houston, or at least occupy blockers for Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh on the defensive line, he might be worth it. So we talked about with the Bills in this division, especially when you got Brady, you have to be able to get to the quarterback without blitzing, because you need to have guys covering and you've got to be able to rush for and get pressure. And I honestly think the Dolphins have the second best in the division front four at getting to the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of people who haven't lived up to contracts, Ndamukong Suh needs to step up this year for Miami in the worst way. They threw so much money at that guy, and he was such a dud last year.
He's definitely a guy that shows up. He's like a front running fan. He'll show up and he'll be good if the team's good and has a chance, like he did those last few years in Detroit. But last year when Miami struggled, he just checked out.
Yeah, you could tell once he knew they weren't going to make the playoffs, he didn't give a shit anymore.
And now he's on episodes of Ballers, talking, like, obviously this is the show, but they opened a restaurant, and I'm like, you know what? I feel like this is happening in real life. I feel like he's doing that as opposed to worrying about football.
Being a defensive tackle, he probably loves to eat, so
true.
It would make sense.
And you mentioned the trade they made defensively. They brought in Byron Maxwell and Kiko Alonso from Philly. For what reason? I'd love someone to tell me, because looking at that Philadelphia defense last year, what would make you think that those guys are, like, worth... they didn't trade a ton for him, but just acquiring for any type of value as opposed to through free agency.
I mean, Byron Maxwell struggled in Philadelphia, obviously. I don't think he's that great of a corner. But I like the Kiko Alonso move. He was one of the better defensive rookies in Buffalo, and then coming over to the Eagles in the LeSean McCoy trade. He was a big up-and-coming linebacker. Then he injured his knee, was out for a little while, came back last year, was okay. But I think he's still got all the potential in the world to be one of the better middle linebackers in the league.
What's the ceiling for him? A.J. Hawk?
That's actually not a bad comparison.
Hawk, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the type of player. He is a more run-stopping linebacker, and he makes some plays in the passing game, but yeah, he's definitely more of that hover around the line guy. We talked about how, especially with the wide receivers that are in the AFC East, you've got to have better corners, and Maxwell's obviously going to be on one side. And Jamar Taylor, ESPN has him listed as their other corner. I'm not sure if they did enough to upgrade those positions that they needed. And it's probably because they have so much money tied up in Tannehill and Sue now that they don't have a ton of flexibility to be able to bring in guys.
Yeah, two big underperformers making way, way, way too much money at the moment.
So let's shift over to the record predictions here, and from our talk there, it sounded like we're all kind of on the same train here. But Wang, let's start with you. How do you have the Dolphins going?
Like I said, Ryan Tannehill has underperformed. Since he had a couple of good years, but he's been on the decline, I feel. Rookie head coaches are always going to struggle, like I said, with the Bills, especially when you're in a division with the Patriots. It's going to be tough. I have them going worse than the Bills, surprisingly. I think it's going to be a disaster in Miami. I've been going 4-12 this year.
Woohoo! Wow. All right. I don't think you're wrong in the sense of why they're going to struggle. I just think that some of the talent that they have will cover up for a couple of things. I don't have them going much better than you. I have them going 6-10. Well, that's only because they always seem to pull out December home games or November home games where it's still like 75 and sunny there, and everyone else is used to the cold. So
yeah, they could easily win a couple of games that I have them losing. It's just I don't see it going well by any means in Miami.
I'm with you. However, I do think eventually Adam Gase will be able to get some things going down there. I think he is a good enough coach.
Oh yeah. I think he'll turn it around, but first year for head coaches is always rough.
Yeah. And people want to play in Miami. We see it in all other sports, and it's true in football too. I mean, no state income tax, you live in Miami, it's not a bad life.
No, not by any means.
Aaron, how do you see the Dolphins going this year?
Well, like, again, to NFL.com, they rated their offseason as a D+.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
So, that means you got worse, if you ask me.
Fair.
Lost their best offensive threat. I do think they have a good front line on the defense with Williams, Wake, and Ndamukong Suh. I do think that's a pretty good front line right there. But I also, along with Logan, I have them going 4-12.
Woo! So we're all kind of in agreement there. Some bad things are coming for Miami, but it might turn around later on. But this, I would agree with you. This is going to be a rough year for the Dolphins. But now let's switch over to Aaron's team, the New York Jets, J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets. All right. Wang, what do you got for acquisitions and departures?
I made a couple of big moves. Obviously, adding Matt Forte to the running back position is big. Steve McClendon, the big nose tackle from Pittsburgh, is now residing in New York. They also added Bruce Carter, a linebacker from the Cowboys, and they traded for Ryan Clady from your Denver Broncos, Bart.
Mm-hmm.
They lost Chris Ivory and Steven Ridley from the backfield. They also lost linebackers DeMario Davis, Jamari Lattimore, and tight end Jeff Cumberland, cornerback Antonio Cromartie, and wide receiver Jeremy Curley.
Gotcha. All right. Aaron, this is your team, so let's start off talking about them retaining, I guess. I mean, he was a free agent, but they got him back. Ryan Fitzpatrick, quarterback. How did you feel about it, and did you just want to maybe ride out Geno Smith and see what happened, or are you happy they brought back Fitzpatrick?
I honestly, gosh, if I'm going to be completely honest right now, I was not that happy about the Ryan Fitzpatrick signing. In my opinion, someone argued with me that Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's never had weapons anywhere he's ever been. I was like, well, that's fair, but he's also been in the league for 12 years, so maybe there's a reason behind that, you know? Yeah, and then you could say the same argument with Geno Smith. Geno Smith, up till right now, has never had a, you know, number one receiver to throw to. You know, Jeremy Curley's been the best for the past couple years before they got Eric Decker and then Brandon Marshall. So, in my opinion, he doesn't have a big arm. He's smart. He can move a tad. Geno Smith can move better. Geno's got a little stronger arm. Accuracy, maybe not there as it is with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, if you really want my opinion, I would take a 26-year-old over a 33-year-old any day. Especially when I think all the attributes are about even. You know, if you're going to go Madden ratings, they're both probably 70 overalls.
I'll give you that. And I'm actually kind of with you, man. I mean, just looking at the situation, obviously, Geno Smith hasn't been able to prove that he earned the job, I guess you could say. But at the same time, it's like he hasn't had a ton of opportunity either. The times that he has gone in is because of injury or, you know, just late in the season and they're bad anyway. So my thought would be you need to find out if this guy is worth it. Or if he's not, just cut him. Like, I don't see a reason. Like, at a certain point, his confidence has to be shot that they were so adamant about bringing Ryan Fitzpatrick back, even after training camp had started, that he's got to be sitting there and like, well, you guys think I'm shit, so why am I here?
Yeah, if he's still got confidence, he's got a strong will, because, I mean, everyone in the media has done nothing but cut him down. But then again, if you're going to play in New York, you got to be used to that kind of stuff. You're not going to get praised if you're average. You're going to get booed. So
true.
It's kind of that kind of scenario. And like I said, I don't think Fitzpatrick. I'm going to say this, and he's going to have another great season. and then they're going to miss the playoffs by one game again, and it's going to make me frustrated. But I think at some point, if you just look at Fitzpatrick's career, Geno will get a chance to play one or two games. And I don't know if I'm not in front of a computer right now, but if you look up, Geno Smith played basically one full game last year, and he had a pretty good QBR, and I think he had 3 touchdowns and 1 interception or something like that. It was a pretty successful game that he had.
For sure, and when you...
Go ahead, Mike. I'm going to argue that both of you are wrong.
Oh!
Because if you're a game away from making the playoffs with that starting quarterback, oh, by the way, he's threw the most passing touchdowns in Jets history. Like, people just go over that fact. You're a game away from making the playoffs. Geno Smith has been your starter for 4 years and hasn't done much. Hasn't done a lot in New York. Keep Geno around, because obviously he's got it. I don't think his confidence is shot by any means, because he's saying all the right things. Keep him around. Have him be your backup. Fitzpatrick is known to get hurt, so maybe he can step in at some point during the season. But when you have weapons like Decker and Marshall and you bring in a Forte, their offense is going to be good. It's going to be very good, but it all boils down to the quarterback position. And I think the Jets have seen enough from Geno where Geno's not going to lead them to the playoffs. So why not bring the quarterback back that almost got you to the playoffs, see what happens. It's only a one-year deal, so maybe Geno can prove something in practice, prove something in training camp. Maybe he's the guy next year. He's still, like you said, he's only 26 years old. Not very old yet. Can hang around. I think the Jets made the best move possible. Give Fitzpatrick a one-year deal. See what happens, and then go with Geno next year. Maybe it's Christian Hackenberg time. I think the Jets did a phenomenal job bringing back Fitzpatrick.
Okay. I will say this. This year might not be that bad of a deal for Fitzpatrick. We don't have a deep threat this year until probably midway through that Devin Smith out of Ohio State, one of the fastest wide receiver times last year's draft. He tore his ACL at the end of last year, so I don't even know when he's going to be ready to play. So I would agree, maybe Fitz is the better fit this year, because there isn't going to be that need for that deep ball down the field.
Mm-hmm. Only sticking with the quarterbacks, just because you mentioned him, I read a report today that Christian Hackenberg has been horrendous, and there's a legitimate chance that Bryce Petty might be the the opening day backup just because he plays more of Fitzpatrick's style. So it would be a little easier transition if Fitzpatrick was to get hurt. But
he has a big time arm too, though, so I wouldn't be completely opposed to that either.
True. They have a lot of young quarterbacks on that team. I don't know entirely what the Jets are doing there, the thought process, but I guess we'll have to see on that. But shifting over to where the Jets are probably the strongest in this division, I would say, is the defense. And Todd Bowles being a defensive coach, and you had Rex Ryan before him, they know what they want. They know the guys that they need for that side. And up front, Wilkerson, Richardson, and McClendon, very, very solid front three. If they can all play, obviously some suspensions looming. But I think the Jets have built probably the most complete defense of the division in the AFC East.
Yeah, I would agree. Today, actually, Wilkerson just got off the PUP list today.
Oh, okay.
So he's a full go on practice. So I was pretty excited about that. Probably no one else was, but... No, last year their defense allowed 19.6 points per game, which is very impressive considering the fact they'd play against Tom Brady twice. I wouldn't expect it to be that low this year. They have a pretty tough schedule. They have to go see, you know, Seattle, you know, teams like that this year. I would imagine maybe like a 4-point, 3-point up in that. But that's still pretty good if you're at 22 points a game giving up.
For sure. And then they obviously still kept Darrell Revis, who shuts down half the field. And when you have that ability to just say, okay, other team's number one is taken out of the game, it cuts down what the other team can do by probably about 3/4, you know?
I'm kind of excited because they cut Clamardi. They didn't re-sign him. I'm kind of excited who they're going to pick to be on the opposite side. They got a couple of intriguing people that they could put there. I'm kind of hoping that D. Milner finally steps up and is the cornerback that they're supposed to be. Maybe he could play on that side of the ball.
He was a first-round pick, wasn't he?
Yeah, was he?
A couple years ago, I think he was.
And I think he was out of Alabama.
Yeah. And right now, ESPN has Buster Screen listed ahead of him, but you're right. I mean, that is the hope. The hope would be that D. Milner can live up to that. I just looked it up. He was the 9th overall pick in 2013.
Oh, what a great pick.
All right, let's jump to record predictions for the Jets here. Aaron, you kind of mentioned they have a rough schedule. I'll start this off, and I want to be optimistic because I think the Jets have the weapons they need on both sides, but like you mentioned, that schedule is brutal, especially early. We've been talking about, you know, looking at stretches during the schedule where, you know, teams can get on a roll or maybe some things snowball and it's going to be rough for them. This is a 5-week stretch that the Jets have to go through to start the season. Cincinnati at home, at Buffalo, at Kansas City, home for Seattle, at Pittsburgh, and I'm gonna make it 6, I didn't even realize it, and then at Arizona. That is a murderer's row. That is 5 of 6 playoff teams in the first 6 weeks. That is rough.
It's brutal.
So
it's gonna be fun.
Yeah. So I actually have them being able to recover a little bit later on in the season, but I think that first stretch is going to be so tough on them that they're gonna be right around 8-8.
I am right with you, Bart. I didn't do this on purpose, because as people have been listening to this, they know Bart and I went through and we picked every NFL game because we're fucking losers.
True!
But I originally did this with Geno Smith, and when the Jets had Geno Smith, I picked them to go 5-11. I didn't think it was going to be good with Geno. It's improved now that they've re-signed Fitzpatrick. But the first 6 weeks, I'm going 0-6.
Oh, man.
I have them winning their next 8 games, but then losing the last 2 to miss the playoffs and finish at 8-8.
Oh, God. Just rip Aaron's heart out.
Yeah, that hurts. That hurts.
All right, Aaron, this is your squad. How do you feel?
Yeah, well, like I said, I looked up on NFL.com for each one. The Jets, they actually gave them a B- for the offseason stuff. So that's actually, I would assume that makes your team better. if I'm going by grade. And that was before the signing of Ryan Fitzpatrick. So, with that being said, I don't think it would move much more from a B-minus anyway, because, like I said, I think you're just swapping out one quarterback's flaws for a different quarterback's flaws, and that, as far as that goes. Of course, I have them going 16-0. No, I'm just kidding. I thought about this. I had them actually have a losing record to start the season. I think I had them like starting like 2-3 or something like that. I do have them recovering pretty well, because I think that I, honestly, gosh, and I fought with this because, and then I just decided, you know what? It's my team, so I'm gonna make them a little bit better than what I probably think they'll actually go. I think they'll actually go 10-6.
Okay.
But I'm gonna stay firm. I'm gonna stay 11-5, and they're gonna hit a wild card spot.
All right.
The only reason I say that is because I know they split with the Bills last year. They beat the Dolphins twice. And it seems like every year the Jets are at least decent, they always split with the Patriots. So right there, you've almost won the division. They can steal a game. You know, they can beat Andy Dalton. They might be able to beat Russell Wilson, although I pick that as a loss. There's a lot of games that are probably going to end up being 7-6 that they might be able to pull out with a field goal. So.
I think you're right. If they do go 11-5 like you're calling, it is going to be a lot of tight games. And I feel like 11-5 would be that best-case scenario for them. I can just see either Fitzpatrick getting hurt one game, or maybe Forte is as broken down as the Bears think he is, and he's not what the Jets need him to be effective. And that tight schedule early with all those good teams, it'll be interesting to see if they start off as rough as Wang and I feel, to see how they can bounce back, especially with wild cards on their team like Brandon Marshall, who
if they can start it off 3-3, I think they're gonna be golden.
True. If they went 3-3 in that first six, I would say they're set up for a playoff run. But 3-3 would be a big ask for some of the teams they have to play, especially on the road.
I can tell you that there'll be a lot of Miller Lights in my future on Sundays.
All right, that was the first three teams of the AFC East. We've got we have another friend for the New England Patriots, and he is angry at one Roger Goodell. But
if I may say something here about the Patriots. Now, I'm not the Patriots expert here. But I had to mention that I'm very excited that Tom Brady finally got what was coming for him for deflating football.
You betcha.
And since I said what everyone else on NFL.com got for an offseason grade, the Patriots got a B+, which was the best out of the division, even though I don't think they added or got rid of that many people.
I think you speak for everybody at the AFC when you say that Tom Brady got what's coming to him. Right?
Yeah. But nobody feels bad for the Patriots outside of New England or Patriots fans.
Exactly. And I think, care if I give a prediction for them, guys?
Nah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. 12-4.
All right. Yeah. So, I can see that for sure.
So I do have them. I'm not that big of a homer that I'm going to make the Patriots worse than the Jets. So I just wanted that to be clear.
Okay, so we're here with our last team in our AFC East preview, the New England Patriots. I think they're the 12-time division champions, but they are running into a little bit of a trouble here. Tom Brady going to be out for the first four games. And to discuss this atrocity, as he calls it, we are bringing on one of my best friends in the world, Mikey C. Mike Cataldo, a diehard Pats fan. Mike, how are you doing, buddy?
Atrocity is not exactly the correct word here. Total sham, outrageous, on par with human genocide, honestly.
Okay. So, Mike, break this down for me, man. Basically, how do you feel that Roger Goodell has handled this two-year almost saga of Deflategate?
Terrible. I honestly can't describe in words the emotions I feel over a physical stabbing motion with my hands towards a picture of Goodell. I wish I could phrase it better, Colton. I honestly do, but this whole, as you put it, travesty, atrocity, as we want to call it here, is just absolute garbage. Goodell has decided that he is judge, jury, and in this case, executioner. And I just won't stand for it, frankly. I don't know.
All I'm saying is if Goodell listens to this, he needs to watch out. A man's coming.
I'm not
for
gonna
him.
Issue the man a death threat, but if he died, I would not be. I would celebrate. You know, I would celebrate.
Okay. All right. Obviously, Roger Goodell, not a big fan, or not, you know, liked very well in Mikey C's house. Well, let's move on to who the Patriots have picked up this offseason, looking for that 13th division title and getting to another Super Bowl. Wang, who do you got for us?
They picked up veteran wide receivers in Chris Hogan and Nate Washington, beefed up their defensive line with Pop Roast, Terrence Knighton, and also a pass rusher in Chris Long and Martellus Bennett to go along with Rob Gronkowski. And losses, they lost Chandler Jones via trade, John Bostic, Akeem Hicks, Gerard Mayo retired on him. They lost Scott Chandler but replaced him with Martellus Bennett. And lost Brandon LaFell as well.
So it sounds like quite a few upgrades there.
Yeah.
Just from a position-by-position roster thing.
I would say their defense got a lot better. They got somebody to pair with Gronk, who's going to be similar to he who we do not speak of, Aaron Hernandez.
Gone forever!
Gone forever.
Yeah, I think the Pats are going to be just fine.
I agree with you. Let's start there with the tight ends, man. I mean, obviously you got Gronk, most unguardable guy in football right now, maybe outside of Antonio Brown. Definitely the most unguardable tight end. You pair him with Michael Bennett, another huge freak athletically, was good with the Bears, could probably even be better with, or I said Michael, Martellus Bennett, excuse me. But you pair him with Gronk, your safeties and your linebackers have really no chance but to single cover at least one of them. And whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo or Tom Brady later in the year, that's going to be insanely hard to stop.
I agree. Having a two-headed tight end monster is one of the biggest benefits in the NFL. Patriots proved it when they had Hernandez and Gronk running all over the field, and I think Bennett might even be better than Aaron Hernandez. For one, he's not a murderer, and for two,
that
probably
helps.
Just a better overall tight end. So Patriots could be scary this year.
Definitely. And Mike, you see, you've seen Gronk in person a few times. I mean, talk to us about what that stadium goes when he makes a big play.
When he makes a big play, everyone in the room feels it. Everyone in the stadium feels it, excuse me. It's electrifying. The Gronk spikes it shakes the entirety of the stadium when he slams that ball down after a touchdown. Just the emotions run wild. I can't wait to see what he does with Tommy this year. Got to wait those four games, of course. A little salty about that still. And just can't wait to see what Bennett does as well. See if he's going to pick up exactly where Gronk is leaving out.
I hear you there. And, you know, the scary thing about the Patriots is it doesn't seem to matter for them who plays running back. They just score. They make big plays. I'm sure it has a lot to do with everybody being worried about the passing offense. But they still got LeGarrette Blount, and he's still going to be doing, you know, big man things, running people over. Deion Lewis came up last year very big, got hurt, but he's going to be back. A definite speed back and can do a lot more things athletically. I mean, Wang, when you see this Patriots offense, what can teams do to... Is it a pick-your-poison situation, or is it some team just going to have to decide we're going to make them run the ball?
Even if they pick that they want them to run the ball, they've got the two-headed monster. They have the guy who can get outside and juke people out of their shoes, or they've got the LeGarrette Blount who's just going to run over you. So if you stack the box too much, you have Lewis who's going to get outside. If you try to do it outside, you got Blount who's going to go up the middle. Then you got to worry about linebackers and safeties trying to be on Gronk and Bennett. I don't know how you defend the Patriots this year. Even with Garoppolo in the first four games, he's got so many weapons at his disposal. It's going to be tough.
My biggest thing is we watched the Patriots and the Broncos play that really great AFC title game, and the Patriots, from the beginning of the game on, just said, you know what, we are not even going to try to run the ball. They weren't worried about that at all. We're going to line up in five wide receivers. We're just going to toss it around because we're not going to screw with this front seven. And that's the thing that I feel like the Patriots do the best job of. They don't, you know, bang their head against the wall. If you've got something that they can't, you know, physically beat, you know, like when their outside receivers are shut down by good corners, they just exclusively go to Gronk or they start pounding the ball with the run game. You know, I feel like they're the most adaptable team, and this, the amount of weapons they keep giving themselves, that just keeps increasing.
Part of that has to be just the greatness that is Bill Belichick. He knows what your defense can't do, and he's going to exploit it with his offense.
Definitely. And, you know, jumping over to the Patriots defense, you talked about some of the upgrades they made. They got rid of Chandler Jones and his affinity for synthetic weed, so that helps. You know, adding Chris Long, veteran guy who was kind of overshadowed in St. Louis / L.A. now because of the other guys that were rushing the passer, but can definitely make plays. And their secondary, led by former Super Bowl MVP, Super Bowl hero Malcolm Butler and a couple other guys, just it's solid all around, even without some of the bigger names that they used to have in their earlier Super Bowl runs. I think this could have a potential to be their best defense since their last Super Bowl.
I would agree. I think the upgrades they made on defense are great to pair with the already pretty good secondary they had. I think Terrence Knighton is a huge signing for them. He replaces what Vince Wilfork was in their glory days. I think Chris Long's a really underrated pass rusher. I know he's getting up there in age, but he was still doing things in St. Louis last year. People just didn't talk about him because they were moving, I guess, but he's still a good player. Patriots are going to be good, man. I'm going to keep saying it, but I don't like that they're in the AFC.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the thing. As much as it always seems to turn over every year, like some team comes out of nowhere and they're a lot better than people thought or whatever, for the last 15 years, it's been the Patriots near the top, the Steelers and the Broncos, all of our three teams, you know, right there competing. And even when the Broncos started that disgrace Tim Tebow, they still got into the playoffs and won a game.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, sure did, Wang. I went there. But then they ended up getting stomped by the
almost
Patriots.
Almost played for the Pats.
He did almost play for the Pats. Mike, what are you most excited to see overall this season from the Pats? You mentioned when Tom comes back and how mad he's going to be at the, you know, the league itself. But what else are you hoping to see this year from the Pats?
Well, obviously, I'm expecting that Super Bowl win. No reason not to have it. Just genuinely no reason not to have it. Tom is back. He's fired up. He's got a vengeance. Can't wait for him to just physically give the bird to Goodell when he picks up that other trophy here. But what am I most excited to see is just Tommy on that fifth game, coming back in, you know, fans behind him, cheering his name, that first touchdown pass, his reaction, what's he going to do, and just everything with it, the electrifyingness of the New England Patriots. They've got so much raw talent on their team. I shouldn't say raw, but so much just talent on their team. Tommy finally has weapons that they've honed in exactly what they want to do. Tight ends, wide receivers, they have everything they want to do. You mentioned running backs a little bit ago. We don't even care about running backs. We want go smoke all the blunts you want. Just make sure you come back and you pass the test. Jesus. I mean, honestly, we don't care about them at all. We just care about Tommy getting back there. As long as you think we'll run, we're going to walk all over you.
Can we just have it. Just how unlucky are the Cleveland Browns?
Oh my God! Right?
Can just not catch a break. First off, they're awful, like, but now you're going to give them a pissed off Tom Brady in Week 5 in his first game.
Exactly.
Back. Oh,
I mean,
no.
And then, so not only does Tom Brady return on the road, but then that next week we mentioned, we mentioned in the AFC North podcast that sixth week. The Bengals go up to New England. Tom Brady's home debut this season. Good God. It's going to be a train wreck both games.
I wouldn't be surprised if Tommy literally shows up with a bottle of whiskey in his hand just laughing the whole game. Because I'm going to take a shot every time I just, you know, throw a touchdown pass, guys.
We got this.
Yeah, we got this, boys.
All right, let's jump over to some record predictions. Mr. Wang, how do you see the Patriots season playing out here?
I think they're going to be just fine. In their first four games, I have them going 3-1 without Tom Brady in the lineup. The only loss in week one to the Arizona Cardinals, just because I think the Cardinals' defense is very good. That secondary will probably be able to handle Garoppolo. But after that, I see him going 12-4 and taking the division and getting the top seed in the AFC playoffs.
Oh, wow. All right. Yeah, I'm going 12-4. I have him at 11-5. My only challenge or change from you is I think they're going to lose that home game to the Bills, only because Rex Ryan always seems to battle Belichick well enough defensively.
True.
And then you mix that in with a rookie quarterback, that's a tough ask for Garoppolo to be able to handle a Rex Ryan-led defense.
Very true.
Mikey C., Give me a number on wins.
You don't even have to ask, my friends. Even with Garoppolo is trained under the literal greatest of all time, the GOAT of the football. Tom Brady himself has trained this man, and he's got all the tools Tommy could ever use, ever want. 16-0. They're not going to lose the Super Bowl this year to the Giants. I'll tell you that much. Okay.
He's and calling it.
Lucky ass catches.
Mikey C's calling the shots. Mike's calling a 16-0 Super Bowl run.
When I play Madden next year, it's going to have all the stat bars just completely full for the Patriots.
I love it.
Aaron is back on the line to give our recap of the AFC East. Mine was not good. I have the Dolphins having a train wreck of a season at 4-12. Bills not much better at 5-11. The Jets having a very weird 0-6 start. Eight straight wins and two losses to go 8-8, and the Patriots coming in winning the division at a 12-4 mark.
I have the Buffalo Bills at 4-12, Miami at 6-10. 7-9 was the early prediction, and then the Jets going 8-8, and New England taking the division, only playoff team at 11-5.
I'm still not sold that the Bills are that good or that bad yet, but the Dolphins, I got 4-12. The Bills, 7-9. The Jets, the wild card team, 11-5, and then the Patriots at 12-4.
There she is, our AFC East preview/predictions. Thanks for coming on, Aaron. This was fun.
That was a lot of fun. I would be more than happy to do this some other time.
If the Jets go 3-3 to start the year, we'll call you back. Because that would be very, very impressive.
I mean, that's like best case scenario. So
for sure. All right, Wang, tell the people where they can find us.
No, I was just going to say, you always say this to me. I'm going to tell you what to tell people where they can find us.
Okay. You can find us on Twitter, Fat Guys N, like Nancy, Friends. Facebook, Fat Guys and Friends. That's where you can find all of our YouTube links. Obviously, our YouTube channel, Fat Guys and Friends. You can email us, fatguysandfriends@gmail.com. Or, because of Wang's ingenuity and precision skill, we are on iTunes. So find us there. Like, subscribe, share, do whatever. Internet terms. Just listen.
Buzzwords.
Buzzwords. Thank you for listening. I'm sure we have another one coming up here of our NFL previews.
Goodbye.